Welcome to Collaborating, the podcast series of the Collaborative for Business Development. Welcome back to Collaborating, the podcast that focuses on all things revenue, best and next practices in sales, marketing, and eliminating organizational obstacles to success. This is part two of a two-part interview with Brian Geary, a sales trainer and consultant who is a longtime FOTC, that's Friend of the Collaborative. We finish up our interview with Brian discussing his final 3 points on how to give great software demonstrations and more about his soon-to-be-published book on the subject. So let's pick up the conversation.
Let's go on to your next point, which is demonstrate how your software solves urgent business challenges. And again, what have you not seen done there, and what's the Brian Geary approach?
I'll tell you a story because it goes back to the early days of my career, and the story drives home the importance of demonstrating to solve urgent business challenges. First job, I worked at SoftPoint Data Systems, Long Island, New York. That was where we sold pharmacy management systems and physician practice management. My primary competitor was Tom Modine at Scripps Systems in New Jersey. Mike, everywhere I went, he kicked my butt. I'd go see a pharmacist, no, we're buying from Tom Modine. I'd call a pharmacist, no, we're buying from Scripps Systems, Tom Modine. Couldn't beat him. So we were a small company. I persuaded the owners, Dave and Joanne Guarino, why don't we hire him? Can't beat him, let's hire him. It worked. We hired him. But Mike, I got to see how Tom kicked my butt. Let's take the example of the pharmacy management. I was showing the pharmacist the software to say, Mr. Pharmacist, look, here's where we enter the patient name. You can type Rodriguez 3 different ways, and with our sound search feature, you can find the Rodriguez you need. And here we enter the insurance company information. See how it automatically populates the insurance ID number? And here we enter the drug. Look, you can look at the generic or brand. Yawn. I was showing features and benefits. Good news, I did present the benefits of the feature. However, it was pretty boring. Tom Modine, on the other hand, said, Mr. Pharmacist, these are the 6 copies of prescriptions that you provided for me. If you would look at the clock on the wall and time me with that second hand, and I'm going to go ahead and fill these, and then I'll tell you what happened. Flip one over, type the keyboard, flip one over, type the keyboard, filled all 6. Mr. Pharmacist, how long did that take? Looks at the wall, 8 minutes. Ah. So if I recall, that would be about 30% faster than it currently takes your pharmacist to fill prescriptions. Is that correct? Yes. A lot of time saved. And let's talk about what happened. Here in this first one, we found out that the insurance plan was expired, so the pharmacist was able to collect cash. And if I recall correctly, you're losing as much as $2,500 a month by filling prescriptions that are not covered by the insurance plan. Thinking about the time it took, I know you're frustrated when you see customers walk in your store, see a long line, and turn around and leave. That would obviously stop happening because you can fill these much faster. And here on this prescription, we checked for a drug interaction. If I recall correctly, you spent 6 figures defending yourself in a lawsuit last year. Well, in this particular case, the pharmacist would call the physician first to check. Oh, yeah, and right here, we were out of stock, but you know what? We could fill it with a generic instead of brand and still collect the $2.75. See the difference? Mike Tom was demonstrating to solve business problems. I was demonstrating to show how my software works.
Right.
I think that story sums up the
chapter. I think so. And in listening to you, I can hear and see in my mind's eye some of my failed software sales situations where I think I did just that, did what you used to do of just selling features and not focusing on the business challenges and selling that way. So that definitely resonates as the way to do it correctly.
I think if there's one takeaway for the listeners, embrace that story.
Right.
Because it sums up selling software. Persuade persuade people to buy your software by showing them how it solves their urgent business challenges.
Mm-hmm. And so your next point is show how your software is cost justified. And I'm assuming, I think you mean by that, or at least partially, the ROI question, answering the ROI question. Is that it, or is there more?
Absolutely, that's it. They can see it like it wanted, but can they afford it? If they give you a stack of money, are you going to give them a bigger stack of money back? That's where we're getting into the return on investment. Got a quick story on that one, too. Years ago, I worked with Jennifer Copley. We were selling physician practice management software. I was a sales manager. She spent weeks herding these cats, if you will, trying to get physicians to all get together to observe the demonstration at once. She finally coordinated the demonstration on a Saturday morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Because that was the only time she could get them together. There were about half a dozen physicians in the room. She got to a point in the presentation where she was presenting her return on investment analysis that she had spent hours working on with the help of the office manager. And she was showing how they'd reduce costs in certain areas, increase revenue with time, the doctors would be more efficient, they'd see more patients, they'd pull in their outstanding accounts receivable, and so forth. And a little ways into her presentation, one of the doctors, Jennifer, I disagree. Well, I saw Jennifer's face drop and her shoulders drop, and she was, all the time and energy, how could he disagree? She thought she lost the sale. But the doctor argued that her numbers were not correct in that the software would save them more money.
Oh, my gosh.
Needless to say, she did make the sale, but the point of the story is, what's the business case? Work with your prospects to show them, I call it that stack of money concept.
Mm-hmm.
A stack of money that's this tall, we give you a stack of money that's this tall. One other point here, too, is very often your primary point of contact has to go to their boss to request or reallocate budget. And as much as you'd like to have demonstrated the software to the boss, it doesn't always happen. You can't always demonstrate to all decision makers. So you have to rely on your point of contact to make a case to their boss. And I can tell you for sure, one of the key questions the boss asks when you go and say, hey, boss, we want to buy this software. They say, how are we going to get our money back? What's the return on investment? What's the cost justification, business case? So arm your prospect with a return on investment analysis.
Your last point, at least here of the ebook concepts or chapters, is demonstrate why your software is better than any other option. Is that only about the competitive situation, or are there other thoughts there too?
Well, the options that you have to take down, if you will, are do nothing, remain status quo. Kind of covered that. Develop in-house may be an option for certain buyers, depending on who you're selling to. They may say, oh, we'll just develop software ourselves. So if that's the case, you need to address it. But the most common, of course, is there are competitors who have what appear to be similar solutions. And your ability to take out those competitors, if you will, is key. I've seen many software demonstrations where they're done quite well all the way, but they never address, why are you better than these specific competitors? So it reminds me of another story. You can tell I'm a big storyteller.
Stories work. Go for it.
In the early days of voice recognition software, I got to observe a software seller. And at the time, there really were only three companies in the United States that had any type of software, voice recognition software. And towards the end of the demonstration, the sales professional said, would you, there's not a lot of companies doing this. If you'd like, I can explain why we're different than other companies that offer. Would you like to see it? Of course, the prospect said, sure. So it was an in-person demonstration, so we went to the whiteboard and listed the three competitors, or the two competitors in his company, and started to list features. Now, anybody with voice recognition has to have this particular feature, and he'd list the feature right across all three, and they have to have this particular feature, and list that across all three, and so on. But then he got a little ways down, and he said, now, I'd like to share with you some features that we offer that not everybody offers. So then he listed things, and I'll go from memory, say it was, we have multilingual software, so all of your employees can use it, feature benefit. We have database integration, which prevents corrupt data. We have multi-user included, so our costs are lower. We're user group driven, so there's continual improvement. So he made a case out of these features and benefits, and literally when he finished on the whiteboard, there was a visual representation that made it just a, well, of course I'd go with your company. So very professionally, he never once said a single bad thing about the competitors. He just presented his companies and his software's strengths over the competitors.
Yeah, that's great. Good.
He did win the sale.
He did win the sale.
Yes, he did.
Of course. So, and one thing that I don't think I read in the ebook has to do with actually the mechanics of doing a good presentation. I've seen many salespeople who, either by training or inherent skills, it's usually a combination of both, are just more adept at being in front of an audience, or have more presence, have more charisma. Sometimes that's important, although gravitas and sincerity and credibility are most important. But what have you seen salespeople do to improve upon that, and what's the importance of that relative to some of the other aspects that you focus more on in what you've written?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up, and we do cover that fairly extensively in the actual book itself.
In the book, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because that can, if all else is equal, that can be what causes you to win or lose a sale. There are times when in the mind of the prospect, no matter how hard you try, they still walk away from seeing your demonstration and two of your competitors' demonstration thinking, well, you know, they're all pretty good. They're about the same price. They can all do it. So a lot of times the decision goes from fact-based logical decision to feel-based decision, emotional decision.
Right.
Now, but I liked those guys the most. And what can have a huge impact is exactly what you brought up, is how they were treated, how they felt. And a lot of this goes back to what our mothers taught us as kids. You know, be polite. Think about other people. Think about their needs. So from the greeting, if it happens to be an in-person demonstration, before you even see your prospect, when they walk in your office door, maybe there's a sign that says, "Welcome, Mike Slemmer from the Collaborative." If you do that and your two competitors don't, one more check mark on your side. You know, if you have taught your receptionist how to greet prospects, warm smile, "Brian Geary is looking forward to meeting you. I'll be bringing you to the conference room before I do. Coffee, water." Now, these are some basic things I almost hate to have to reiterate, but I don't know, sometimes in the pace of business, they're easy to forget.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will mention, and I have, I think, mentioned this in other podcasts and certainly in some things we've written, but from the standpoint of presentation skills, I will endorse till the day I go to the grave, Toastmasters. I think there's no better organization out there for training anybody, and really especially salespeople too, in presentation skills than the week-to-week training one gets by being an active member of a Toastmaster club. So,
I second the endorsement. I'm a competent Toastmaster myself. And
there you go.
I'm actually a founder of the Sales and Marketing Toastmasters Club here in New England.
There you go. Good stuff. I was a longtime member, not right now, but was a longtime member, and can't endorse it enough. And you can certainly find out more about Toastmasters, find your closest club at, I think it's toastmasters.org. I think it's that versus .com. Right.
Well, good. It's funny you brought that up, because I have not been to a Toastmasters meeting in many years, but I credit my success at public speaking to what I learned at Toastmasters. But I have a client I'm working with right now who has a problem. What I mean by that is, I'm afraid I might have even said it during this conversation, because it's a bit contagious when I hang out with this particular person.
That's okay. I'll edit it out, Brian. No problem.
But I have on my short list to highly recommend that he attend Toastmasters meeting, because they do a terrific job helping you get rid of your nose and your ums and
your ahs. And oh, yes. There's nothing like the ringing of the ah horn when you repeatedly say ah, so that will cure you of it right quickly. So that's great. So looking at the chapters of the book, it looks like you do go into a little bit more detail in some areas, and I won't drill down too much, but a couple of things were intriguing, and one we haven't talked about too much, and you, I believe, didn't give it that much space in the ebook, and that is demonstrating remotely. How does any of what you've talked about change, or what does one have to keep in mind more in demonstrating remotely?
Yeah, so that's a good point. So part one of the book will actually be six chapters, all of breaking down that software demonstration goal, and part two gets into best practices of top producers and best practices in general, and that's where we address demonstrating remotely. And the fact that more and more, it seems, demonstrations are being done via web conferencing. So it's just important, in addition to some of the things we mentioned earlier about making it memorable, take into consideration the environment when you have remote demonstrations taking place. And little things make a big difference. You've probably seen this where you're looking at a screen and people are moving their cursor to show you, and they're moving it. It's distracting and can be frustrating. We don't even think about that sometimes as presenters. So use your pointer and your highlighter professionally. Avoid rapid movement. Check in with your audience periodically. You need to do that in any demonstration, but when it's remote, particularly if you have two or three people on the line, you may even up front say, I'll be presenting, but what I'll do is I'll stop after each slide or two or each key point, and I'll ask each of you for questions or comments. And then go in a round robin that's anticipated. Mike? Oh, no, all set. Susan? Joe? Then move on. So you got to check in with your audience periodically. Also, try to involve your audience. And this is pretty hard when it's remote. How do you involve someone when they're sitting, could be half a world away? There are some technologies that enable you to share your screen and give people control of the mouse. Perhaps you can have them do a data entry function. You might use a survey-type tool where they can answer questions on a survey and you consolidate the results. So when we talk about demonstrating remotely, we just say be sensitive to the nuance of people being in completely different locations. Keep them involved. Keep them there with you.
Okay. And, of course, I don't know if you've experienced this as well. At least I've heard this, and it seems to work when we do webinars or training or demonstrations online, and that is the thought about speaking even faster than you normally would face-to-face, because the mind listening happens a lot faster than one is normally, in the cadence that one is normally speaking in. And if you speak faster, it tends to keep the mind more engaged. So we've seen that, heard that that is effective. I don't know if you have any experience with that notion.
That's a great point. And in consultant speak, I'll liberate it from you. And I'll put it in the book, but I'll have to mention your name now.
Okay. Oh, drat. Well, of course, I'm so demure that I just can't stand that you would put my name in your book, but go ahead.
So. You know, you do, and it's a very good point. I'm glad you made it, and absolutely true. And it made me think of something else that is in the book. Show screens often. Think about when you watch TV. The scene changes amazingly fast. Pay careful attention to it. Movie, news, doesn't matter. Sometimes many scenes are less than a second. Same thing in any software demonstration. If you're showing screens, try to avoid staying on the same screen for long periods of time. But it's even more relevant when people are remote, so you're flashing more information before, more visuals before their eyes. Will keep them engaged. In the same way, speak faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, good point.
One other chapter you have here is on body language. What in particular do you refer to there, or what do you train on there?
Sure. You know, there's a great book by Tanya Ryman. I think it's called Body Language. It's The Power of Body Language. Terrific read, and she gets into nonverbal communication and the importance of it and the impact that it has. Your nonverbal body language can communicate sincerity, confidence, enthusiasm. So using the proper body language can influence buyer in a software demonstration process. And it's as simple as greetings and maintaining eye contact and smiling in a firm grip handshake, as we've all heard. When you're in front of a computer using the monitor, keep your shoulders back. Talk to people, not the computer screen.
Seen that many times.
Forward towards people slightly when they speak.
Mm-hmm.
Emulating other people's body language. If they cross their arms, cross yours.
Right.
They lean on an elbow, lean on yours. And there's a lot of science behind this. When answering a question, for example, you may want to hold your chin, look up and to the right for a brief moment. And look people in the eye when you state your response. It presents a whole different image and therefore feeling that the prospect has. So those are some of a whole series of points.
And of course, I don't know if you discussed this in the book at all. You, of course, by working with Jen in the past and Beverly here at the Collaborative, you must a fan too of behavioral style and motivations and everything that DISC and Motivators talks about. So of course, I'll tout that as well as another way to know your audience and be the one salesperson that people like the most because you are speaking to them in style.
Absolutely. Huge fan. Dominance, influence, steadiness, compliance, if I recall correctly.
Exactly.
People as a high influence or high I, as it's referred to, where they're friendly, talkative, like to talk about things other than work, connect with that style and be like them.
Exactly. And not disingenuously, just adapt yourself to your audience when you're there demonstrating and you'll be even more memorable.
Correct.
Well, Brian, this has been excellent, excellent, great information, really, from a lifelong tech software guy like myself. I love to see books and specific research and knowledge come forth about how to sell technology, and looks like you've got a great one here coming out. So if you could share with our listeners how they would get in touch with you or get the book or any other type of information like that you'd like folks to know.
Sure, very simple. Technology Sales Consultants is my firm name, and the website is Tech Sales Consult, T-E-C-H, Sales Consult. And if you forget that, my name, Brian Geary, is spelled unique, G-E-E-R-Y. There's not many, so even if you type Brian Geary into Google, there's a pretty good likelihood you'll find me if you spell it with two E's instead of E-A.
That is great, and this has really been excellent. Brian, I thank you very much for your time here. Excellent, excellent information. And actually, when are you estimating that the book itself will be out?
It should be out no later than this January.
January, that will be January of 2013.
Yes.
I want to make sure we say the date because we hope these podcasts are listened to forever and ever.
I agree. They should be. The ones I've heard are all fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
And I feel privileged that you invited me for this interview, Mike. Thank you so much.
Oh, this has been great. So, and with that, we again thank Brian for being our guest, talking about software demonstrations and how to be great at them. And until next time, this is Mike Slimmer saying, keep on collaborating.